Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the Jubilant Jen Adcock, the Dauntless Dungeon Master's Block, and the Charismatic Craig. Today we have myself, Ange, along with JT, and another random GM we found along the side of the road. No, seriously, Andy is a good friend, a fantastic GM, and a regular streamer. So, Andy, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, everyone. I'm Andy. I run games with Matinee Adventures. We run games at Origins and UConn, so twice a year. You can find us out in the wild running games. I am also a cast member and a one-shot GM on the live stream Twitch channel known as the Untold Stories Project. You can find us on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, most weeks, streaming Mutants and Masterminds. And then in the fall, we start up our one-shot season where we'll run everything from Deadlands to Power Rangers to Trash Pandas.
I think there was Honey Heist in there at one point,
yep.
Too. Yeah. And I believe all of your stream series are on YouTube, so we can have a link for that at the in the show notes.
Most of them are, yeah. I think we had a couple of series that may have gotten lost, or at least an episode or two that did, so.
Yeah, and if you don't have all the episodes, it's kind of what's the point of having the series up there. So thank you for joining us, Andy.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
Before we dive into the main topic, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. What's one of the most memorable pre-gens you've ever played in a one-shot? JT, you go.
So this was Kobold Con back in 2019, which was sadly the last year for the con. It did not survive the pandemic. Aww. Sad. But it was a really good local gaming con here. Local meaning Colorado Springs, because that's where I'm at. But Rob Schwab was one of the headliners, if you will, for that year, and he was running a one-shot of Punk Apocalyptic, which was a game he was in the very tail end of playtesting. He was about to launch the Kickstarter for, ran a one-shot, and I don't remember if the gender was pre-assigned for this particular character or not, but I ended up playing a female character. And it's been so long, I really can't remember if I was like, yes, this has a feminine vibe in my mind, at least, so it's going to be female, or if that was already filled in on the character sheet. I really don't remember. Anyway, I'm playing a female engineer type, you know, mechanical engineer type person. And during the course of the adventure, we encounter another group of women who are dancing naked in a field on the edge of a forest. And through previous interactions with other NPCs, I was kind of leaning into playing this female character as a lesbian. Just, it just felt right for that character, okay? Come across a gaggle of naked women in a field, and I'm like, here we go. My character's a lesbian. It's my coming out scene, right? So I go join the naked women. I strip all my gear off. All my armor gets dumped in the field, and I go cavort around the field with these, you know, other naked women, and turns out they weren't really women, but some sort of demon things, like radiation mutated demon things, as Rob Schwab likes to put in his games. And a fight ensued while I was butt ass naked. And it was very interesting to try to survive a demon fight with, like, me running across the field to grab my gun, but not put on my armor, that kind of thing. Had a blast with that scene. Rob loved it. He loved my interactions and how I played the character. It was just a hoot to play that character.
And I mean, hey, the rule of thumb with playing in a one-shot is, you know, ride it like you stole it.
Oh, yeah.
So, Andy, what about you? What's one of your memorable pre-gens that you've played in the past?
Oh, man. I have two that stand out. One mostly because of the players at the game, and the other one just because it was such a fun take on things. So the first one, I played Abe Sapien from the Hellboy universe. So I got to be at the table and try to do the fish blinks and the intonations that Abe does in the movies that you kind of get when you read the comics, but was done so well in the first set of movies. And just, I had a blast with that one, mostly because the concept of that game was that Abe, Hellboy, and Liz were investigating why Ronald McDonald, the Burger King, and Wendy were alive and running around. So we were running around with a John Woo style Burger King.
Awesome.
Like Kimbo pistols and everything. So that was a lot of fun to play in that game. And the other one was again at Origins. The last one was at Origins too, by the wonderful group of Amorphous Blobs GMs, was that Hellboy game. The other one was a random game I picked up at Origins. It was a Big Eyes, Small Mouth, and it was a satire of JRPGs. I got to play a combination of Cloud Strife and Squall Leonhardt, so the protagonist from Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, with a little splash of Sora from Kingdom Hearts in there, because my Keyblade was basically a stick with a wet paper with a wet toilet paper as the end of it. It was interesting. That game was a lot of fun also because of that satire and also the people around me. So
that sounds hilarious.
Nice, nice. And what about you?
So I've had, as you know, just like Andy, I've had many memorable characters over the years. But the one I'm going to call out is the first time I got to play Chiana from Farscape in a game. It was by pure accident that I ended up playing that character. I had been invited to play in this kind of invitation-only Farscape game, and I was offered the character of Zahn, who is much more of a spiritual leader type character. She's very serene. She's part plant, you know, much calmer character. And I'm like, this sounds like an awesome game. I want to play. But then I get to the table and they're like, yeah, Chiana's player didn't show up. So you kind of have your choice. And I'm like, which would you guys prefer me to play? And they're like, play Chiana. And I'm like, thank you, because I am all about the rogues and the chaos and the, you know, the scoundrels and that type of thing. And so Chiana was right up that alley. And the game itself was a ton of fun, but the reason I call it out is that was the moment that put me on a journey to become friends with this whole extended group of people. I became friends with pretty much everyone in that game. We continued to play that Farscape game at subsequent Origins, and then eventually that morphed into playing at other times off, you know, like in the middle of the year, we'd get together and play, and then we started this small, you know, private convention called MatineeCon for us to get together and play, and it's morphed beyond that game, but it all started for me with playing that one pre-gen character. Now, moving on into our topic of discussion, why you may wonder, well, why are you asking a question about pre-gen characters? Because we are going to talk about making pre-gen characters. For a variety of reasons, we've all got them on the mind. JT is currently working on playtesting a game he's creating, and Andy and I are both headed to Origins, where we're going to be running a bunch of games with pre-gens, because that's what you do with your one-shots. And we thought this would be a good topic to just look at what makes a good pre-gen character, the different types of pre-gen characters, some mistakes to avoid, tips on how to make the game memorable, and so on and so forth. So the first question I'm going to ask to get us rolling is, why would you want pre-gen characters? JT, I'll start with you.
All right. I have really two basic reasons. Number one, it saves time at the table. Like, in my case, I'm with my regular home group playtesting the RPG that me and two friends made. So we're not limited on time as far as one session, 4 hours, 3 hours, whatever your time slot is. But we wanted to just hit the table and hit the game running, really. So I made up a list of 8 archetypes, made the characters for them, sat down at the table when I got there with the characters, gave a brief description, like 1 or 2 words. This is the thief, this is the fighter, this is the ranger, this is the druid, so on and so forth, and allowed the players to pick. So there was no analysis paralysis. Our particular role-playing game that we're playtesting is a point-buy system, which opens the door for a lot of options, and we didn't want...
A lot of analysis paralysis.
Exactly, a lot of analysis paralysis. And me knowing the game, obviously, since I helped write it, and I knew what archetypes I was going to create, it helped me really narrow my focus down on one character at a time. to build out the characters. And my second reason for doing pre-gens, especially at a convention one-shot, is it levels the playing field. A player's poor dice rolls during character creation, or maybe poor choices if it's a point-by system, won't cripple their ability to have fun at the table because they have, quote-unquote, a crappy character. I'm not saying you can't have fun with those kinds of characters, but if all the characters have the same, like, D&D attributes to start with, there's no whining about, well, my average attribute is a 7 and everybody else's average is 16 and I suck. And it just eliminates all that, right? It puts everybody on a level playing field. So those are my two big reasons why I want to bring a pregen to a table.
What about you, Andy? What are your thoughts on why pregens?
So I like pregens for a lot of the same reasons JT does, but also you can make sure that there's buy-in for the story that you're telling with the pregens that you bring to the table, because not only are you in control of what their characters are, but you're also in charge of what the relationship between the characters is. Mm-hmm. So you can already set up that, you know, so-and-so character is in love with such-and-such character, or these two characters are fighting, or they've had rocky relationships in the past. So you can already kind of give the players a little bit more information to help that role play session, just because you've got that there. And then also you are getting them to kind of say, I like what I've got here. I'm going to lean into this, right? I see where you're going with this, and I don't have to worry about somebody coming at it and being like, I wanted to play X and I'm going to play X regardless of what you put in front of me. You know, you have what they have. You don't have any other choice than what's there. You can still manipulate and go with what you've got, and you have a framework to work from. You're not just gonna come up with something random out of the air.
Yeah, it's the you can still end up with players that decide to take the character in a direction that is unexpected and possibly jarring for the rest of the table, but you can still control a little more of that randomness by having all of the characters kind of connected. I'm also a big proponent of making sure all of the characters are balanced. Each one is going to have a niche that
yes.
character excels at.
Yep.
You know, to make them shine during the game. But it also, I can make sure that other characters have abilities that can cover things if by chance I don't end up with all of the pregens in play. Because sometimes you can make 6 pregens and only have 4 people show up to the game. Yep. So you still want to make sure that you've got certain things covered. Another thing, Andy kind of touched on this, but another thing I like about pregens is it can help you create a certain type of story for the game. I like creating characters that have certain connections together, and I will often throw scenarios at them that are related to those connections or related to character histories or NPCs or that type of thing. And this means I've got everything on the table that I need to work with for that adventure, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, and another angle from pregens is that you can attach the pregens to some aspect of the world, whether that be a NPC, a faction, or whatever, and you can loosely establish that relationship. Like, you love the baker because growing up, he gave you a free cookie every Friday. And if the baker is an important character in the storyline, boom, you've got a insta-hook between that particular pregen and some NPC in the world.
Another thing I wanted to touch on is when we say pregen, there is a wide variety of a vast array of differences in the type of pregens you can bring to the table. And I kind of wanted us to talk about that. What type of pregen characters have you used in your games before, Andy?
Well, for a lot of the games that I tend to run, I am pulling from established pop culture. Mm-hmm. So I ran a game, the very first game that I ever ran at Origins was a Cartoon Universe game. I ran it in Fate, and I made probably the mistake of making 18 different cartoon characters from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
You got a little enthusiastic.
I got a little enthusiastic, but I thought, I'm like, I don't know what my audience is going to be. I'm running a cartoon game. I'm going to have gamers from all walks of life and all ages, so I better just kind of run the gamut of, like, what were the 20 years of cartoons that I grew up with that I can pull together?
Right.
So, yeah, so I tend to go from existing pop culture. I mean, I did the Cartoon Universe games. I've done Warehouse 13. Mm-hmm. I'm running Castlevania this year. I'm running Power Rangers this year with established either characters from the video games or from the TV show. I haven't really done a whole lot of pre-gens that are like my own concept. I did with...
Your Things from the Flood and Rocketeer games.
Yes, my Things from the Flood game and my Rocketeer Core game. I came up with characters on their own and, you know, created backstories and connections for them. But generally, when I'm making a pre-gen, depending on the story idea that comes to my head, I'm drawing from established pop culture or or something that I've seen that I can manipulate into something. So when I'm building the pre-gens, I have a loose set of background information and or power choices that I can make or that I can choose from, so that I can kind of mold the character the way I want it to be, depending on what system I'm using.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it too. Like, pre-gens made in different systems end up with different things. So like a Castlevania character in Fate is going to be vastly different than a Castlevania character in Mutants and Masterminds, let's say.
Right.
But I like to, when we're talking about like what pre-gens I'm going to have at the table, they're usually, it's usually a decent variety. I mean, I've never done 18 like I did in the first game. I usually do 6 or 7. I try to make sure that I've got even-ish split between male and female. I let the players kind of choose from there. Not a whole lot else that I do with the pre-gens that I put out there for them. You know, I try to give them an idea of like, this character is really good at X, Y, and Z, kind of like what you said. And they have a niche. You want them to play into that niche, but you don't want to pigeonhole them to only play that niche.
Yeah. What about you, JT?
For games that have specified classes, I like to show up with one of each out of the main book, not all the splat books and expansions and blah, blah, blah. No, not going there. Especially not for things like D&D 3.0, right? And all the third-party products, right?
Oh, gosh.
You're just asking for pain if you do it with...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because then you show up with more than 18 characters for the players to pick from, right? So for your class-based systems, I try to do one of each class, maybe an extra fighter, maybe an extra wizard that has something different than the other wizard, things like that, right? Give them some options. For the non-class-based, I try to just pick some archetypes from that genre, whatever the genre is, and fill the major archetype roles that fall out of that genre. And I lean into the tropes and the cliches and all that, because everybody familiar with that genre is going to be comfortable with those tropes and cliches, and they can fall into the character more easily, which is the whole point.
Right.
So that's the approach I take. And I like to have more than one fighter type, because there are some players that are going to be new to the game and they're going to want to play just the baseline. I want to smash things with an axe or a sword or, shoot things with a ray gun or whatever. Because they want the simple character, so to speak. And they don't want to mess with spells or supernatural powers or whatever. So I try to have 2 to 3 fighter types in the collection for them to pick from.
For me, it really depends on the game I'm running. I've done the gamut of, a bare bones character that the player can hang a name, personality, gender on, whatever they want, to a fully fleshed out named character with a background and connections. One of the games I really enjoyed running was a supernatural game back in the day where I came up with... This was back when I would run convention games for 8 people. I've since scaled that back to 6.
Good
but
call.
I had 8 characters that were all connected to this one NPC that had died and left... had a will, and all of these characters were named in the will. And among these characters, I had a married couple that was on a break. I had a brother and sister. I had other people that knew each other. I had the dead guy's ex-wife. You know, all of these characters with very specific backgrounds, very specific knowledge of each other. And, like, that creates a very specific experience with those characters in relation to that scenario. Around that same time, I've also started running a lot of Doctor Who. And with Doctor Who, what I ended up doing is I created basically 8 archetypes that I just named the ex-cop, the historian, the game store nerd, the artist. And for these characters, I gave them a little bit of a background, the fully statted out character, but then I let the players tell me what their name is, what their gender is, what they look like, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily specify the relationships they had with the other characters other than say, you all know each other, you've all worked together before. And that one was interesting because I had certain characters that would get described the same way every single time. For example, the game store guy almost always had a Hawaiian shirt. There's nothing about a Hawaiian shirt in that character's background, but every player that played them described them wearing a Hawaiian shirt. The historian, even though there is nothing in the character's background that says they're British, was always played as British. Meanwhile, the artist was never the same twice. You know, from the chain-smoking, black turtleneck-wearing hipster artist to the free-love hippie flower child artist. It was just always very funny to see what different people did with it. These days, I mostly run, at conventions, I mostly run a lot of the Free League games, and those generally have archetypes. And I've gotten very specific about the archetypes I pull, and I try and give the players enough to dive into the game without having to, you know, overthink too much or have to add too much to it while still allowing them to put their own spin on these characters. What do you prefer? As I said, the more detailed kind or the blank slate where, you know, the players can hang all their stuff on it or, you know, they've got enough detail that you know what you're dealing with. Andy, what about you?
I have to go with the more detailed characters. Even when I'm creating a character from scratch and not pulling from pop culture, I'm going to give them a lot of information as to, like, what's the motivation for this character? Why are they doing what they're doing? And that kind of stuff to kind of, I figure the more information I'm giving the player, the better off they're going to be at the table playing that character. I had a game that's based around a superhero anime called Tiger and Bunny. And the premise of that is that all the characters are superheroes, but they all work for corporations and they're all competing to be, you know, quote, the best superhero in the mm-hmm. city. And it, you know, it's real to them and it's a real competition, but they're all friends. But I gave every one of the characters besides one a very heavy secret that the players found out about once. They didn't get it until they had already chosen the character and there was no take backs. so you couldn't, you're like, okay, here you go. Here's your extra bit about the character. And they'd look at it and some of them would go look at me and I'm like, you took the character. You're stuck with them now.
All right. Cool.
but I wanted them to have that. Like I wanted them to be real superheroes from a standpoint of like, they had done things that they weren't necessarily proud of, but they were doing things to try to make up for it. You know, not gotcha. Necessarily the tried and true blue Boy Scout type of superheroes, but just a more down to earth, more grounded type of superhero. So anytime I do that, I'm trying to give the players as much information about the character they're playing as possible. I've never actually done a true blank slate game where I've just come up with like a shell and I've let the player put themselves into the shell. And I don't know if that's just a product of how I tend to tell my stories when I'm running one shots mm-hmm. where I have the story already in mind. So I have characters that I think work, so I make those characters, and I don't exactly know how I would form a shell to allow somebody right. to make to take the shell and make it their own.
What about you, JT?
I'm very similar to Andy here. I want all the mechanical bits fully detailed. And if the character has like a really cool ability, power, spell, feat, whatever, I'll make either a cheat sheet or cheat cards for them to you know, quick reference, not cheat sheets, but you know, quick reference material for all those special abilities. But the remainder of the character is mostly a blank slate. And what I mean by that is like on the back of the character sheet or on a secondary sheet, I'll have a list of, we'll call them fate aspects for them to pick from. And I'll have probably about five of them. And I'll tell the player, X out the ones that you really don't want to apply to your character. Circle the ones you want to really apply to your character. Leave the rest unmarked. And maybe they come up, maybe they don't. And I take a quick glance at what people have X and circled, just so I have in my mind what where they want to lean or what, you know, towards or away from. And one thing I don't do is I don't give names, genders, sexual preferences, height, weight, all that good stuff to the characters. I'll allow the player to fill that in, you know, make that up as they see fit. I might give a little guidance on body type and size, and I tend to lean into sports for that. So they're going to be NBA tall. Make up a height and weight that fits NBA tall. They're NFL linebacker big. They're soccer player athletic, because I use sports for this because almost everybody has some experience with what a line, how big a linebacker is, right? Or how tall an NBA player is, right? Things of that nature. So rodeo clown short. Because most rodeo crowds are short because they got to fit in the damn barrel, right? So there you go. So those are the guidance, the general nudges I give for non-mechanical aspects of the characters.
It really depends on the game I'm running. I have often run Power by the Apocalypse games as one-shots, and those tend to have playbooks for the characters, and the speed at which these characters can be put together varies from game to game. So don't assume that every single Powered by the Apocalypse game is going to work the same way, but I have found like Monster of the Week or Masks I can bring to the table for a convention, and I will let the players choose which playbooks they want. I will have them establish the connections between their characters, and then we'll hit the ground running. The caveat with those games, though, where it's a blank slate and the players are telling me who they are, one, I make sure they're all on the same page about what game we're going to be playing, and two, I have no idea what I'm going to do as a GM until the players tell me who their characters are.
Nice.
And then basically after character generation is done, we'll take a momentary break. I'll think about some of the seeds these players planted with their characters, and then I'll come up with whatever scenario we're going to play with. That's just how those games work for me. But if it's a game where I've actually planned out a scenario, that type of thing, I have very specific characters that I've put together for it. I try and be a balanced group of genders, as much as I can, a balanced group of ethnicities. But it all depends on the game and what I'm getting. You know, like, I mean, I gotta admit, my Vaesen pregens, they're all pretty white because it's
Britain-ish.
Victorian England. It's, you know, but I try, like, other games, I've got a much broader variety. Let's move on to what you think the biggest mistake a GM can make with pregen characters, besides making 18 of them.
At least it wasn't 65.
JT, go.
I'm going to say showing up with a preconceived notion on how the character is going to be played, because you're not in the player's head. And if you're at a convention game, odds are you've never even met the person at all until the moment they sat down, pick up the thief, and decide, you know, they're going to play that particular character. So don't come up with a know what the character's about. capabilities are, but don't show up with a preconceived notion on how those capabilities are going to put into play. You'll either be disappointed, upset, confused, stymied, whatever, right? You insert other bad emotional adjectives in there. Those are all going to apply because the player's not going to play it that way. So that's my only bit of advice there.
I will say you can have an idea of how the character can be played, especially if you've run the scenario and those characters before.
Sure.
But you still have to keep an open mind about how different players are going to approach things.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on this one, Andy?
So I think, I mean, outside of JT's, because that's a really good one to keep in mind, I think one of the biggest mistakes you can make as a GM is writing a scenario completely revolving around one of your pre-gens.
Oh yeah.
If you completely make the story and it ties into the background or the skills or just something about one specific character only, it can make the rest of the players feel left out. It can make them feel like they're really not involved, which will then take them out of the game. And what happens when you have not enough players and that character doesn't get chosen?
Yep.
You're then, as the GM, kind of up the creek without a paddle, trying to figure out how to shift your scenario. So I like the idea of not putting all in eggs in one basket.
Yeah, one of my notes was going to be similar to this, but I just specifically on that, you can do things where there are elements of a scenario that are related to specific characters, but you can't have it specifically dependent upon only that character for the bulk of the adventure.
Yeah.
As an example, in one of my Tales from the Loop games, there's a situation where the fact that one of the characters' mothers disappeared when they were a kid, when they were a baby. And this becomes an emotional touchstone point for that character, but it's not the linchpin of the whole adventure. It's just a kind of an emotional moment in the adventure for that character. There's still plenty of other things going on. There's still plenty of other things I put in there related to the other characters. You can say things like, I think this adventure would work best if these characters are in play, but you still can't design an adventure around only those characters. My follow-up is always make sure the pre-gens you put on the table have something to do in the adventure you are going to be running. One of my pet peeves is to show up to a game and discover the GM didn't give a crap about the pre-gens they were providing. They just found six of them online, brought them to the table, and you have two characters who have absolutely nothing to do in the adventure. One of these I played was a Serenity game. It wasn't the characters from the show, it was other characters. One of the characters was very social, all about talking to people and using her influence. The other one was a doctor. Our two characters had absolutely nothing to do the entire adventure long, because it was basically the ship flying to a location, discovering there were Reavers there, and running away. The pilot had things to do. The fighty type characters had things to do. The captain had things to do. The two of us just sat there.
Suck.
And it was very obvious that GM didn't really care about the characters at the table. And I will say, as a player, it's your job to find ways to get your characters involved.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the GM needs to make sure there's also stuff there for you to engage with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the GM has to build the door. It's the player's job to open it.
Yeah.
And if the door doesn't exist, what do you Kool-Aid man your way through and ruin the game? I mean,
I've seen it happen.
Oh, yeah.
Another foible I'm going to put out there for GMs to be careful of, and I say this primarily for myself, don't write too much background. I like writing backgrounds for characters. In fact, I love it. It's one of the favorite things I do when I put together pre-gens for a game. And I have learned to make myself keep it short because nobody wants to read a book at the table. There's going to be, if you write too much, there's going to be details in there the players miss as they skim it to get into the game. And it's just not, it's just keep it simple, keep it short. You know, you can make it interesting, just don't go over like a paragraph or two.
Yeah, fair. In the game that I'm playtesting right now, we actually have a background system where building your character is 5 background choices. So you're picking like, you know, well, you have to start as a child, and then that establishes some skills that you have that you picked up as a child, and then you can go like, I don't know, soldier, then military officer, then bounty hunter, and so on and so forth, or you can be temple acolyte, cleric, priest, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of background choices there. Well, every choice you make comes with a random background event, which molds your character's background, it shifts it a little bit. So it's not just a straight through line. So not every cleric is going to be identical. Not every mage is going to be identical, so on and so forth.
Can you die in character generation?
No, you cannot. No, you can be imprisoned and earn no gold for whatever it was, 2d6 years, which sucks. But, you know, there's equal amounts of good and bad on the background. Actually, we leaned it a little more towards the good, the beneficial events, right? You cannot die during character creation. That's a different role-playing game that I created years ago. And actually, it's a push your luck thing. You could die of old age. It really what it boiled down to. You could have as many backgrounds as you wanted and really build up your character, but you age every background choice you make, and you could push your luck and go, well, I want to be the 97-year-old wizard. Well, your natural lifespan was 93 years, so you died during character creation. Start over. But anyway, for the pre-gens, I just
very,
wrote...
Very traveler.
Yes, very traveler, yes. But for the pre-gens, I just wrote the mechanical effect of the background, and as I handed them out to the players, handed the characters out to the players, I was like, I know this is a playtest, so you don't gotta, but I would really appreciate it if you actually came up with a very brief story regarding why your long lost uncle who came back from an adventure befriended you when he returned, or things like that. Just kind of jot down a few notes. Give me a name. Who did he adventure with? Was he part of a mercenary company? Help me world build a little bit. Things like that.
Yeah. So with your pre-gens, what's the best way to make the game memorable for your players? What can, you know, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit there, JT, is like leaning into stuff the players are giving to the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the game master hooks the PCs into the story with hooks. That was a horrible sentence there. But also, the players are going to throw bait to the game master based on their decisions that they have made with their characters. And it's really the GM's job to pick up that bait or that rope or that lead or whatever and entice the players with what they provided, right? Just give back into the game what the players are given to you. So,
what about you, Andy?
Yeah, I agree with JT. You do need to have something that each character is good at and has that moment to shine. I also thoroughly enjoy listening to my players when they're having their role-playing moments, when I'm not driving the story towards them or mm-hmm. having them in the middle of something, when they have those role-playing moments, paying attention to the things they're saying and seeing is like, ooh, can I, you know, give them that because they're being clever.
Yeah.
Can I give them that? Or I had this in mind already and and they're already kind of like on board with it and they seem excited. So I'm going to, you know, going to get to it early, that type of thing. As a GM, paying attention to what the players are doing with the characters you've provided to them will allow you to, you know, get them more invested in the game.
Yeah, in regards to that niche thing where you give each player an opportunity to have their character do something cool, combine that with listening to your players, because sometimes they will come up with an idea for how to do something with something their character is good at that you may not have expected. Mm-hmm. You know, they may think of using a certain set of skills to tackle a problem or an obstacle in their way that you weren't really like, oh, yeah, I guess they could do that. And you have to be open to the possibility of letting them do things in ways you didn't expect.
Oh, yeah, especially when you give them really cool abilities that you wrote them, you knew they were going to be game-breaking, and you still put them on there anyway.
Yep.
And then they use them in a way that you didn't expect, and you're just kind of like,
yeah.
Yep.
Or you give...
I did that to myself.
Character A a power, and character B a different power, and they combo with each other, but you didn't see it in the moment of character creation. But your players see it during gameplay, and you're like, oh, I broke the game. I didn't mean to. Yeah. But, you cheerlead them along. You're like, yes, teamwork. Go, you know, please kill the big bad in one shot by combining power A and B and aiming it at the big bad guy, right? You know?
Yep.
This is a lesson in always expect your players to be smarter than
you. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they're going to think of things you didn't.
Absolutely.
One of the other things I'll say is lean into what those characters should know or their experiences in the world. Like, if you know that there is a thing you're presenting in the scenario you're running that is relevant to one of the PCs, point it out to them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, you know this about this particular situation. Because the player isn't going to have that wealth of knowledge, but you want to respect the competency of the characters. So you want to make sure you're throwing them all of those details that, you know, they may not have been aware of just by reading, you know, the short blurb paragraph you made for their character.
Right.
It's you know, this is something you do in every game you run, is lean into celebrating the characters the players are playing. Any last thoughts on pre-gen characters that you wanted to, you know, like, before we start getting out of here?
One is, GP? If you have the time, make sure you make your own pre-gens. Don't just, like, snag them off the internet and show up blind to the table with them. Because all of the advice we just gave is really based on the foundation of you're making the characters. Now, mm-hmm. if you don't have time, you're strapped for time, it's a last-minute thing, okay, you know, hopefully if you're running a game at a convention, it's not a last minute thing, but like, you know, in your home group, the game master goes, I just got the crud. I'm not showing up, but everybody else can make it. So you're throwing down together a one shot in like 2 hours. Sure. Download some characters. Everybody will expect a imperfect game, but at a convention where people pay to get in the door, don't do that to them.
Yeah. Even if you are grabbing pre-gens that were made by somebody else for the game you're going to be running, give them a good close look.
Yeah.
I rebuilt the Serenity crew, the actual cast from the show, because I hated the pre-gens they put in the Serenity book. They're so unbalanced.
Oh, no.
They're built on drastically different points, and that just made me angry. Like Wash was built on like 80 points less than male.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wait, I know male. It's, no, don't do that. That's not fair to the players picking up these characters.
Right.
Yeah.
And really. I even had it happen with a Knights Black Agents game where I found some pre-gens to pull, and I started looking at them, and just, they weren't as bad as the Serenity characters, but there were just issues with them that I needed to tweak and fix before I felt comfortable putting them in front of a convention group. What about you, Andy?
So I'm going to say, make the characters that you would want to play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more you're excited about the characters that you're putting together, the more fun as a GM you're going to have when you see the players playing those characters. And you're going to be more invested in what you've built and how they're built and how balanced they are with each other. If you sit down and say, I want to play this character, how do I play this character in such, or how do I make this character in such a way that it is going to be really fun for me, and therefore hopefully fun to somebody else.
I will say, as somebody who regularly runs games at conventions, one of my absolute joys is seeing the way different players play the same characters. I have a cast of Faison characters. I have a cast of Tales from the Loop characters. I have those Doctor Who characters. And it's just absolutely delightful to see what different players will do with those characters. The weirdo from my Tales from the Loop game, she's basically the child of hippies who basically started working in academia. She's flighty. She's goofy. And just, it is so funny seeing what different players do with her. Like, one player will make her parents vegetarian so she doesn't know what meat is. Another will be like, you know, my parents are growing this stuff in the basement. Do you want some? Just leaning in, you know, it's so much fun to see the different things people will do with these characters that you've let them take and springboard off of. Anything else, or should we get out of here?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm okay. Good too.
This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link at the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show you should check out.
Pandas Talking Games. Queer gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas Phil and Senda every other Wednesday answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's kind of like Car Talk, but for your games.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Guys, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today? Andy, I'm going to let you go first because you're our guest.
Okay. Well, like I mentioned, I am part of the Untold Stories Project. You can find us over on Twitch and on YouTube. There's also a webpage out there for blog posts and link to our shows, link to our characters that we play, because we've kind of gotten this expanded Mutants and Masterminds universe that we've played in. Come find me there. Come say hi. We absolutely would love to get some more eyeballs on the things that we do, because we think we do good work, and I feel like everyone would, you know, kind of benefit from seeing some of the shenanigans we get up to on a weekly basis. As for games, I am thoroughly enjoying a game of Fabula Ultima that is being run by one of my friends. We just started up a couple of weeks ago. Haven't gotten too many sessions in, but we are absolutely leaning into those JRPG tropes, and that game is so well built.
This is the game that Carl, who was our guest from a couple of episodes ago, told us about in that episode.
Oh yes, it most certainly is. I mean,
yeah,
we actually discovered last game session that every one of us has a different primary color as the character. So we have red, we have blue, we have yellow, we have green, and purple.
There you go.
It was just kind of like, we're like, huh, okay.
That's hilarious. Nice. JT, what do you have to give a shout out to today?
All right, so I'm going to talk about Worlds Without Number. If you've listened long enough, you've heard me talk about Cities Without Number and Stars Without Number. This is Kevin Crawford's fantasy spin on his quote-unquote Without Number series. So Worlds Without Number is the name of the game. I'm not currently playing that because I'm currently playtesting my own game. However, I am leveraging Mr. Crawford's work because it is packed with cool ideas on how to build your setting and your factions and your everything that goes into a fantasy world. Think about it. He's got some advice for it. He's got randomizers for it, for prompting ideas. It's super neat. His approach is super simple, and I think it's just really great guidance. I really wish I had this book like 30 plus years ago when I built my very first D&D world, because it would have been a much better D&D world than what I made 30 plus years ago. But the link to where you can buy the PDF and print versions directly from Kevin is going to be in the show notes.
Excellent. From me, coming very soon to a Kickstarter near you is Cubicle 7's Victoriana. I am very excited about this one. It is a steampunk Victorian fantasy game, and the Gnome Stew's Walt Chinowski has his fingerprints all over this one. It is his baby, as far as I know. If we're lucky, there's going to be an adventure book that comes out that I may have had something to do with. If when this episode drops, we have a link to the Kickstarter, I will definitely be including it. But right now, it's just an announcement from Cubicle 7. But I am still very excited about this one because I've been waiting for it for a while.
Is it a cooperative game of intrigue and investigation?
It is.
Oh,
it
is. I have the link right here. I will slap it in our show notes for your reference.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, do you think the pre-gen characters we made are good enough to avoid being thrown in the stew, or are they lacking?
I think the pre-gens can be thrown in the stew. I got plenty of spares, and I think Andy does too, because he made 18 of them.
I mean, Andy made 18 characters.
Right, right. So. Yeah, yeah. Well, he can spare one.
I can spare one. Yeah, that 18 ended up being like 21 when I was done because I ran a sequel to it the next year and added a bunch more. So
awesome.
But I only made 18 in one sitting once.